What kind of fool am I and are you? In the course of somewhat over 40 years in being a clergyman, I have delivered about 3,600 sermons using approximately 7.25 million words. Sometimes I have been just remarkably informed on the subject and are a true expert. Sometimes I have been mildly informed but did my due diligence. And sometimes I've been utterly at sea, wrestling with important issues that I am not at all expert in, but I just wanted to model wrestling with the important issues that we face. However, on the topic of being a fool, I speak with some expertise. I believe that I qualify and would qualify as an expert witness for being a fool. And I've always liked the fool. I've always wanted to play the fool. Now, I know part of that is because you can co-opt the laughter and you can control it, so you don't have to worry about embarrassing yourself because you kind of come to the event pre-embarrassed. If you've lost all sense of shame and have no fear of ridicule, you're way ahead of the game in terms of public speaking or teaching or preaching or any of these things where you're called upon to use lots of words, some of them which may make sense and some not so much. I think that playing the fool is an important role. It's not the same thing as being foolish or stupid. To me, the model of the fool really comes out of Shakespeare. It's the jester. It's the person or people who can tell truth to power and can tell it in such a way that it gets heard and the fool doesn't get immediately shot, hanged, stabbed, dismembered. That's kind of the difference between the fool and the prophet. The prophet speaks truth to power, but without any regard for the social niceties or survival. The prophet does not need extended care insurance or a retirement plan. The prophet is just not going to make it to spend the end of his or her life fishing and relaxing. The fool, except in Shakespeare, where nobody survives, but the fool has a chance that by using humor, sometimes mockery and even ridicule, that there are important truths that slip past the censors. If somebody gives you a reasoned argument, you can be preparing all of the reasons why they're wrong and you're right. But if somebody gets a joke through and you laugh, you've had a visceral experience that you then have to deal with. That's why humor is so subversive. The fool believes that the words, the tricks, the misdirections all have some purpose to bring some clarity of thought, to cut through rhetoric, deception, and cant in order to illustrate some kind of deeper truth and open people up to seeing the contradictions and the hypocrisies, the deceptions. It's the fool who, in the form of a young child in the Emperor's New Clothes, says, "But Mom, Dad, he's naked." Well, everybody else saw it, but only that innocent fool, that child, had the courage or the innocence to speak the truth, and to speak the truth kindly, and to speak the obvious truth. I know when I fell in love with laughter. It was a very specific moment in my life. There are life-changing events that all of us have, and if we're lucky, we remember what they are if they're the good ones. If they're the bad ones, you will inevitably remember them forever. But I remember that I was doing the dishes at home, And my mother and father were discussing our neighbor down the street, somebody named Marilyn Monroe. And my mother mentioned her name, and being an eight-year-old, I said, va-va-voom, and which I had no idea, except I heard people say those sorts of things, and it seemed mildly appropriate. And my mother looked at me and said, so you like blondes, do you? And I knew this was funny, but I didn't know why. I just knew it, and I just said, so who looks at her hair? My mother and father literally fell out of their chairs in hysterics, laughing, crying, coughing, and wheezing. And I will tell you the therapeutic truth. I have been chasing that moment ever since. And I never got it back yet. But I am hopeful. I am foolish enough to believe that it could just happen. And I've been chasing that balance ever since between, a truth and an insight and a vulgarity, and it's awful tough. It's an awful tough balance, and sometimes you fall off the end. I remember a friend of my wife's was writing a book on public speaking, and she consulted me to on a chapter on humor in public speech without a victim. There is no humor without a victim. It's either the person saying it, or some group, or the audience itself. There is, in humor, as in magic, as in religion, as in politics, deception. Be ready for it. Example. The most popular soft drink in the world is a Coke. A funny story is a, the white of an egg is a, no, the white of an egg's the albumin. The yolk's... This is getting fooled. And for some reason, we kind of like it. That's why we go to magic shows. But I learned that humor could have a different value when I was exposed to two of really my favorite comedians, satirists, who walked that line and eventually fell off of that line between being a fool and a prophet. And that was Mort Saul. And I remember again, independent recollection of the first joke that to me had redeeming social value. It wasn't just a laugh. 1955, the Montgomery bus boycott is going on, and Eisenhower is running again against Unitarian Adlai Stevenson. And Mort Saul observed that Eisenhower would walk a little black schoolgirl into class himself, but he couldn't make up his mind whether to use an interlocking grip or an overlapping grip. Golf joke. He also said that Eisenhower was for gradual integration and Stevenson was for moderate integration, and he wondered, is there nowhere between these two great extremes that we can't find compromise? That was the moment that illuminated it for me, that these are the teachable moments that are shorter and sweeter and more incisive than argument. I remember the first joke that I ever wrote, and it was for Mort Saul. This was when Reagan was examining whether or not we should stick with our one China policy or have a two China policy. And I pointed out that Reagan was befuddled by the question because he knew that Nancy Reagan had a five China policy, all of them Limoges. He got a bigger laugh than I did, but they were drinking. What can I tell you? The world offers us so many opportunities to see the craziness, to see the hypocrisy out there. So many opportunities to be fools, to just look at reality and decide, am I going to cry? Sometimes. Am I going to laugh? Sometimes. Am I going to just find a way to find both the pain and the learning in the moment at poking fun at serious subjects? Because The fool does not talk about trivia. That's the clown's job is to bring us down. The fool's job is to, with a rapier, open us up in order to see things. One of my favorite rants recently, and it just came up again this very week, when a judge found that it was illegal to import drugs from abroad that were going to be used for lethal injections, because the drugs weren't proven by American standards to be safe and effective. Now, I can't make this stuff up. You just have to look at the world when you have these kinds of contradictions and just go, wow, thank you, Lord. It's just a beautiful day that we can just get involved in all these kinds of things. That the whole idea of being a fool, of telling the truth without too much fear of what will happen, it is a balance. As I said, Mort Saul, Dick Gregory had my favorite line of the civil rights movement, and it was a line that was stolen later by Woody Allen. And Dick Gregory said, you know, I sat at a lunch counter for 5 years waiting for them to integrate, and when they did, they didn't have what I wanted. It's sad, it's funny, it's true. You go for something that has some level of truth to it. It isn't silly, and it isn't really foolish. Now, the fool usually believes that he or she is playing the fool as opposed to being the fool, but sometimes we fool ourselves and fall off the edge of the world. In 7.25 million words, I've occasionally fallen off of the world, misjudged tone and intent, and that also happens. But fools try to tell the truth in a way that informs, doesn't cut people down, and has the kind of innocence and optimism that is, to some people, foolish. People who believe that the world is fixable, that our brokenness is healable, that our lives make a difference, that our choices make a difference, that we are capable of changing the world with our actions, with our songs, with our efforts, with our lives, and with our values. That the fool believes that we are educable, moving towards perfection, but like any promised land, never arriving. Always working towards something, towards building something. That you know that we're beginning our financial campaign gives me the very natural segue to talk about all the fools who brought me here and all the fools who have supported me and sustained me, and in doing so, how we fools have grown together in number, in depth. Who but fools, when this congregation was down to an average Sunday attendance of 13, a very religious number, by the way, would have taken a risk in calling professional clergy? Who but fools would have believed that we would move from that little room downstairs to the room next door, into this sanctuary, that we would have two chimes choirs and a choir? Last night I talked about the first time that I came here when I met with the 13 people downstairs, and I wanted a hymn, and there were no hymn books, so I had everybody sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat, and tried to convince them that it was a Hindu hymn, that we are all rowing our boats, but we should do it merrily, 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 because life is just a dream. And it works. You know, it works. I don't think that was the original author's intent, but I'm not Scalia, so I can make up the intent if I want to. I'm a Unitarian. It means what I tell you it means, as long as you believe me. When you stop believing me, it doesn't mean that at all anymore. But who but fools would have taken the chances and bet that we would be where we are today? Who but fools and innocent of guile? Every Christmas, I do this reading that Christmas is for the children. and ask that we all be children at Christmas, throwing away our foolish pride, throwing away those distinctions, those ways that we keep ourselves from each other. Difference between being foolish and being a fool. Being a fool is to search for the truth. It's to say the truth in a way that doesn't bludgeon, but illuminates. We use this wonderful chalice, has been a sign and a symbol of Unitarian Universalism since ancient days following World War II. And its fire, we believe, warms and doesn't burn. Its light, we believe, illuminates and doesn't blind. So too with our humor. So too with our hopes. So too with our dreams. We are dreamers, and we dream of a tomorrow. We are believers, and we believe that we can make a difference in the tomorrow. We believe that we can make our dreams flesh and our flesh program. When we do our every member, stewardship, canvas, budgetary drive, whatever term of art we're using this season, the truth is we're not raising money, we're raising program. We are keeping the lights on those lights, and we're keeping the lights on these lights. We are creating with all of our programs, from the smallest child to the vital community outreach that we do in Fullerton, in the Armory, in all of the ancillary organizations that all of us belong to, we are doing important work. And take away any part of this congregation, and we are not the same. There are people who say, you know, look, I come once a year. I come at Christmas, or I come at Easter, or I come at Passover, or I come at Thanksgiving. This is in honor of Jack Thiebert, who insists that I say this at least once a year. The congregation is not Brigadoon that comes out of the mists once a year. We have to be here the other 364 days, the other 365 days on leap years, and have it all. Without the children, we are not making and modeling a commitment to the future. Without the music, we're not singing our song and having that experience of the whole being greater than the sum of our parts. Without our outreach to the community, without the outreach that whether we do it corporately as a congregation or we come in simply to recharge our own batteries so that we can go our own way to be involved in the world, we are not putting our values into practice. We come together every Sunday. We come together on holidays, on holy days. We come together to eat, to drink, to celebrate, to mourn, to dance, to live together. Because we know, fools that we are, that we enrich each other's lives. And we know, fools that we are, just as Jody said, that we shouldn't be overly sentimental about family. Sometimes family is full contact. Sometimes you bump into each other. Sometimes you step on toes. Sometimes you cry. Sometimes you raise your voice. Sometimes you slam doors. But know that the doors are unlocked, and they're always open for us to come back together, to come back into each other's embrace, to be together, to work together, to grow together, to plan together, to make tomorrow better together, and tomorrow better because we are together here.